and welcome to KTOO's very own Juno Afternoon here from the capital city. It's going to be a great show. We are going to be chatting with Dr. Goodhart, who's visiting Juno. He's a professor of English and Jewish Studies at Purdue University's Department of English, and he's here to talk about death and the afterdeath tonight. Then we'll chat with the guest stars of the Folk Fest, and then we'll get a preview of Juno Douglas Little Theater's new production and end with Nancy DeCharney on Arts Up. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A group of Standing Rock Sioux tribal members are protesting an oil pipeline project. They're concerned the nearly $4 billion Dakota Access Project will threaten the environment. The proposed pipeline would run through North and South Dakota. Tribal member LaDonna Bravebull Allard says she's concerned an oil spill could ruin the area's drinking water or damage parts of the nearby Missouri River.
There has been no guarantee that this pipeline will not break. There has been no guarantee that our water lines will be safe.
Tribal citizens say they'll continue to protest as their leaders ask federal agencies to reevaluate the project. Supporters of the pipeline say it will create jobs and bring in millions of dollars in property taxes. Energy Transfer Partners is in charge of the project and argues it's the safest and cheapest way to transfer oil from the Dakotas to Illinois. Members of the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs say they'll issue a subpoena for Environmental Protection Agency leader Gina McCarthy to appear at an upcoming committee field hearing. Arizona Senator John McCain raised the issue Wednesday during a legislative meeting in Washington. McCain expressed his unbelief that the agency has declined to send a representative to Phoenix on April 22nd to examine the Gold King Mine waste spill. Last year's spill caused by the EPA devastated tribal communities in the Four Corners region. McCain says the EPA is failing in its government-to-government relationship with tribes.
Believe me, this was devastating, and there is no doubt about the responsibility that rests with the EPA. So therefore, we had requested as part of the hearing you had, Mr. Chairman, that the EPA send a witness so that we can talk about the reclamation and healing of the native lands, the Navajo lands that were absolutely devastated by this toxic spill. 3 million gallons of toxic wastewater, 3 million gallons were unleashed.
McCain says the EPA's response to the hearing is unacceptable and violates the senator's work to protect tribal interests. McCain requested the committee issue a subpoena, which chair of the committee, Wyoming Senator John Barrasso, agreed to do, adding that the issue is a priority. McCarthy appeared and answered questions about the waste spill at a hearing last year. Tribal leaders and lawmakers have vowed to hold the EPA responsible for the spill and its impacts on Native people. A Minnesota tribe is taking another step to help improve nutrition and health among American Indians across the country. Reporter Melissa Townsend has more.
American Indians across the country face some of the highest rates of chronic disease related to poor nutrition. Coming up this May, the Shakopee-based Dakota community will host a gathering of tribes and health experts. They want to identify concrete policies that can change these statistics and improve Native health. It will be the second national gathering for the community's Seeds of Native Health initiative. Dr. Tiffany Beckman is a member of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, and she's the first American Indian adult endocrinologist in the nation. At the University of Minnesota, she's a doctor, professor, and leader of the Healthy Food, Healthy Lives Institute. She has many big ideas on how to improve the health of Native people.
To treat the diseases, we have to go back and rebuild our nations by getting education and getting some of our sovereignty back, and also putting the land into trust so that we can protect it.
The Shakopee Mattawakutan Sioux community holds that improving health among Native people requires Native leadership and culturally specific health policy. I'm Melissa Townsend.
In Minnesota, some Bemidji City leaders and others are calling for comic Ralphie May's scheduled show this weekend to be canceled. This comes after a recent social media storm called out the comedian for his jokes about American Indians. Critics took to social media calling his humor racist after a video of him insulting Indians circulated online. The unapologetic comedian also took to social media defending his jokes. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. If you or a loved one suffer from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who've had their day one at nativenews.net. Support by Vision Maker Media, whose mission is to empower and engage Native people to tell stories. On February 20th, Vision Maker Media celebrates 40 years of advancing Native culture, heritage, wisdom, sacred stories, and the storyteller. More at visionmakermedia.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 6 minutes past the hour. It's Folk Fest week. It's an exciting time in Juno. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And the weather right now is diminishing rain and then highs around 51, mostly cloudy tonight and back to rain tomorrow. So in the studio, we have the UAS lineup. We have Katie Basler, we have Saul Neely, and a special guest, Dr. Goodhart. He is here from Purdue University, where he's a professor of English and Jewish studies. He is here for he's been here about a week, and he's been doing various things with UAS, but tonight he has a lecture called Death and the After Death, the primacy of the ethical in a time of disaster. That's 7 to 9 p.m. at the Egan Lecture Hall. And welcome to the program, Dr.
Thank
Goodhart.
You, John. Appreciate it.
So can we talk a little bit about this lecture tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fascinated with someone like Charlotte Delbeau, who was a Holocaust survivor, and who said in an interview sometime in the 60s, "I died in Auschwitz and nobody knows it." What can that mean? I mean, how could that be true? And so she's saying it. She's saying it in the 60s. And yet it seemed to me it felt authentic. And so my work in the last couple of years has been trying to investigate what renders that statement or a statement like that authentic. And as I began to look into it, I found the idea everywhere. I found it in Elie Wiesel's work. I mean, I went back to the most famous of Holocaust survivors, perhaps, in the book Night, the very end of Night. We've always read that book, but we very rarely talk about the ending of that book. You know, Wiesel as a young man, as a teenager, he has now been let out of the camps, and he has liberated from the camps, and he said he hasn't seen himself in the mirror since he's left Siget, since he's left the town of Romania, where he was rounded up, and his parents and his father died in the camps and so forth. And he looks in the mirror and he says, a cadaver looks back at me. And he says, that face has not left me. Well, what it means in some way is that he's writing from the point of view of that face, since this book is written 10 years after, and he's now recalling, in some sense, the origin of the writing of the book, which is that cadaver. So it suddenly occurred to me that this idea of writing from after death, writing from the point of view of a corpse, speaking about one having died in Auschwitz, might be a more powerful way of thinking about what was taking place for these post-Holocaust individuals than we have here, you know, in the past been able to identify. And so I've worked with Lawrence Langer, and he has this book that's coming out called After Death. And I have a quote here. I'm not going to read it, but it basically he's saying we know about the afterlife, but we don't really talk about the after death of the Holocaust. And so it seems to me, the Holocaust becomes in this context one way of experiencing disaster. That is to say, so I generalize that. I don't say specifically in after the Holocaust, although that for me becomes my way into it. But at the ethical, what is the ethical like in a time of disaster? And it seems to me it's founded on something like what I call the posthumous. Writing from a place in which the only authentic way to describe my status is that I died. So what I say is I died, therefore I am, has to be the new cogito. It's not I think, therefore I am, or I feel, therefore I am, or God exists, therefore I exist, therefore I am, but I died, therefore I am. It seems to me a survivor of the Holocaust cannot say anything less than that. And if one is to speak with an authentic voice.
That is fascinating. Oh, my gosh, Saul is nodding along. Well, there's a connection between the two of you, right, Saul?
That's right. Yes, Sandra Goodhart was my professor at Purdue University. I was in the Philosophy and Literature PhD program there, and I wrote my dissertation under Sandy's direction and defended that in 2009. And we also co-founded the North American Levinas Society, which is an international academic society based off of the work of Emmanuel Levinas, a Lithuanian-born Jewish-French intellectual, also a survivor of the Holocaust. And Sandy and I have been working together on that for 10 years.
And what is the work of that Levinas Society?
We convene an annual conference and meeting and, you know, try to do our best to bring new generations of scholars into the work of Levinas. Levinas's family from Israel and France, they're involved in the society as well. And, yeah, our next conference is actually in Toulouse, France, this summer.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Goodhart, you've written mm-hmm. 5 books, over 90 essays.
Mm-hmm.
And what you were just talking about was...
Mm-hmm. New material. Yeah.
Right. So is most of your work based on the Holocaust?
No. Actually, I'm a literature prof. I started doing literary criticism, and I met René Girard, who is a Frenchman living in the United States teaching at the University of Buffalo, where I went to graduate school, and I began be interested in his work. He has a theory of scapegoating all of society for him, all of culture, all cultures in the world, archaic and modern, are organized around exclusionary behavior, the surrogate victimage of an arbitrary victim, the killing, the murdering, the lynching of a victim, but that the modern world is, in its religious scripture in particular for Girard, is a way of trying to think our way out of victimage as the organizing principle of culture. And so I became fascinated by that, and I did my dissertation on Oedipus, on Sophocles' Oedipus. You know, who killed? I called it "Who Killed Laius," because I think there's some evidence in the play that Sophocles is playing on the arbitrariness of the victimage of Oedipus, and suggesting that in fact, you know, one could easily make the case that Oedipus himself did not kill Laius in the context of that play, and so that the designation of Oedipus by himself as well. That he is the murderer of Laius is to some extent a taking on of the role of the scapegoat, and it's the beginning of a process of the explicitation, the making explicit of the scapegoat mechanism, so that in his view, Christianity and in my view, Judaism, are ways of moving outside of sacrifice. You know, the rabbis say we pray after the end of the temple, and what they mean by the end of the temple is the end of sacrifice. After the end of the temple, we pray and read. And it seems to me reading is a form of prayer, davening for the rabbis. And so what I'm interested in is the modalities of the anti-sacrificial, of the non-sacrificial, of ways of moving away from exclusionary behavior. If Girard is right, and I think he is, then we have to find ways of living in some fashion that's ethical, independent of these sacrificial mechanisms. So I turn to Girard for analysis of the past, if you like, of our cultural structure. And then I turn to Emmanuel Levinas as an articulation of the ethical, an ethical which for Levinas, as Saul was telling you, is founded on infinite responsibility for the other individual, for the neighbor, for the person standing face-to-face in front of me, a responsibility that has no limit, that we can't count it. It's infinite. It's without. There's no place at which we say, okay, I've finished my responsibility. Now I go out to dinner. You know, no. So how do I live in a way that is not simply the consequence of politics and the consequence of social structures, but somehow prior to social structures? It's the ethics as first philosophy, as the primary relationship that we live with. So I'm trying now to understand how this notion of the posthumous fits into this idea of the primacy of the ethical. That's how I'm situating what it is that I'm doing tonight. And I'm trying to think about what happens in a time of disaster. How do we begin to think about the ethical if what is authentic to us is I died, therefore I am? If that's the only way in which we can understand authentically what has taken place, then what does it mean to be ethical in that context? That's what I'm trying to investigate. That's what I'm trying to think about. Yeah.
If you're just joining us, that's Dr. Sandra Goodhart. He's here visiting. He is a professor of English and Jewish Studies at Purdue University and philosophy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And author of 5 books, 90 essays, and tonight the lecture is Death and After Death, The Primacy of the Ethical in a Time of Disaster. But what you were saying about the responsibility for your neighbor, it's just kind of fascinating to me. I'm speaking for myself here. Mm-hmm. You know, as Americans, what's our responsibilities to our global neighbors, you know, to our neighbors here, you know, in Alaska, in the nation, and then internationally, you know, when you think about the haves and have-nots and how much we have compared to the world. Just kind of interesting that you said, you know, so many of us have these dinner conversations you know, okay, like, I'm done now, I'm going to, you know, go back to my life.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah, I think it's not an easy task to think about these things. I think we tend to think of it as easier than it is. I think we need to, as a first start, separate the political and the civic and the social from something prior to that, from a sense of being a human being that derives from the ethical, so that the ethical is already part and parcel of the fabric of which we think. In other words, we're not deciding to be ethical. We are ethical whether we choose to accept that responsibility or not. We are already responsible by being human beings, it seems to me. And that seems to me is a very, very powerful idea. And it's more powerful than saying, okay, I'll choose to be responsible, but then I have these other things to do. But in fact, I need to go on with the rest of my life. No, my life exists in some sense only as an obligation to the other individual. You know, Levinas speaks in some strange ways in a book like Otherwise than Being. He says it's like gestation. It's like childbirth. He said the other is an extension of me. Responsibility for the other is, it's as if the other was born from me. How could a mother ever give up and say, okay, I've finished with my responsibility for my child. I'm not responsible after this point. No, I'm always responsible. Even when they leave, I'm still responsible. I'm responsible for them. I'm responsible for their responsibility. I'm responsible for educating them. I'm even responsible, Levinas, this is to me the hardest, responsible for their death. I mean, that's a lot of responsibility. It's hard to imagine more responsibility than that. Now, when we put it into a political level, it seems to me it becomes slightly more difficult because I'm responsible to you, Joan. We're face-to-face right now. But I'm also responsible to Jeff, and I'm also responsible to Saul, and I'm responsible to everyone that I encounter. And so how do we negotiate this third person to whom I'm also infinitely responsible? And that seems to me that's where Levinas takes the beginning of the question of the social, and that's where the question of justice or fairness begins to come up. But it seems to me it's one thing to begin with my infinite responsibility, and it's another to say I start with politics and I'm the worker, or I'm the player, or I'm man the thinker, and somehow I choose to be responsible. No, I am responsible by virtue of being a human being. And my responsibility has to find ways of extending to not only my face-to-face encounters, because that would be, in some sense, the easiest, but also to these larger contexts.
It's fascinating. Just by being conscious.
Consciousness equates. In French, you know, conscience means conscience as well as consciousness. The word conscience in French is the one word. In fact, they have to distinguish it, conscience morale or conscience à soi. They say consciousness when they say conscience à soi, and conscience morale means moral consciousness. So we say conscience as opposed to consciousness. But in French, they have the same word, means both.
It's all fascinating. So tonight, Death and After Death, The Primacy of the Ethical in a Time of Disaster, Dr. Goodhart, 7 to 9 p.m. Saul, would you like to add anything about the lecture, what people can expect, even more than what we've just been discussing?
No, but we will have copies of the paper for those who are in attendance, and that will help folks follow the lecture. It's going to be a classic academic public lecture, which thrills me.
Okay. Are you listening, all the intellectuals of Juno? It's going to be the Egan Lecture Hall tonight, 7 to 9 p.m. Okay, thank you so much. Katie, do you have something to add?
Well,
Katie?
My head is spinning right now. I'm wondering about basic human rights and respect for each other amidst this presidential election, but I'll just leave it there.
Well, you know, it's fascinating. As we were talking, I was thinking about, okay, in a time of disaster or any time, that's a whole other conversation. But go ahead, Katie. What do you have to say about what's cooking at UAS?
Well, 'tis the season for events at UAS. This is just a really intense time for us as we lead up to commencement, which is happening May 1st. So I just want to let people know that in addition to Sandar Goodhart's presentation tonight at the Eden Lecture Hall at 7 o'clock, which is free to the public as part of our honor symposium, today at 5 at 360 right here downstairs, the School of Management is holding a talk with a Commissioner Valerie Davidson, the Department of Health and Social Services. She's also a UAS alum. Presentation on engaging conversation on Medicaid expansion and reform. Then also tomorrow at 5:30 in the Egan Library, there is an event. It's kind of an exclusive event for members of our Alumni and Friends Association, but we want to just kind of let people know, because there has been some information about this out there, that Ben Huff, our adjunct professor of photography, will be doing the opening remarks, and this is to celebrate UAS staff and faculty who have been published in the last year. So that'll be a nice event. Ben, I'll remind you, is the author and photographer of The Last Road North, and he is also working on some new project on Adak Island. But then Ben Huff will be staying for a presentation at 7 o'clock as part of our Sound and Motion Arts and Culture Center. That'll be down the hall at the Egan Lecture Hall. And then I just want to let people know next week, I'm going to send you to a website for all the information, but we have a very exciting second annual Art Meets Science Week at UAS, Monday through Friday. And so I'll just give you the titles of the themes. We have Monday's Academics. Tuesday is Cultures and Environments of Southeast Alaska. Wednesday is Research and Creative Activity. Thursday is Community Engagement. And then finally, Friday is our final Sound and Motion event, the Tidal Echoes Literary and Arts Journal launch. And these are mainly senior students giving presentations on everything from culture in the workplace to who's Indigenous to Tuesday night, a film, the conservation of sporting literature with the theme about That Is King Salmon with David Montgomery, and then our undergraduate research and creative activity students who got some grants through Arts and Sciences. They'll be doing their presentations 2 to 5 on Wednesday afternoon the 13th. So to find out more about this, it's just so exciting, you just go to uas.alaska.edu/art-meets-science, all one word.
It sounds great. Wow, a lot happening.
Yeah.
But it kicks off or continues tonight at 7 o'clock with Dr. Goodhart, who's here from Purdue. So by all means, take advantage of this great opportunity. It's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you all for coming in today. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to put on our Folk Fest hats.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 7th of April, 2016. The first city-to-city television broadcast took place on this date in 1927. Herbert Hoover, who was Secretary of Commerce at the time, appeared on it. It was broadcast from Washington to an auditorium in New York City. The broadcast began with a close-up of Hoover's forehead because he was sitting too close to the camera. But he backed up and gave his speech, in which he said, "It is a matter of just pride to have a part in this historic occasion, the transmission of sight for the first time in the world's history," and so forth, and so on. It's the birthday of the poet William Wordsworth, Cockermouth, England, 1770. Both his parents died during childhood. He was brought up by his uncles. In 1780, Wordsworth set off on a walking tour of Europe with his friend Robert Jones. They were equipped with a walking stick, 20 pounds in their pockets, and all they needed for 3 months, their clothing and so on tied up in a pocket handkerchief. They went to see the Alps, to see Mont Blanc. They traveled through France and Switzerland and into northern Italy. And it was a walking trip that was an inspiration for Wordsworth for the rest of his life as a poet. It's the birthday of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, born Minneapolis, 1890. Graduated from Wellesley, then drifted around the country, working jobs in department stores. She was married and divorced and eventually reunited with her father, who had divorced her mother, and who was editor of the Miami Herald, and there she became what she wanted to be, which was a writer. She's best remembered for her book, The Everglades, River of Grass, in which she made clear that the Everglades is not a swamp, but a broad, shallow waterway, and her book helped to pass legislation to protect the Everglades. It's the birthday of the jazz singer Billie Holiday, born Philadelphia, 1915, wanted to be a dancer, but when she couldn't find work at clubs, she tried her hand at singing. And it's the birthday of the writer who said, write about what you're afraid of, Donald Barthelme, born in Philadelphia, 1931, raised in Houston, Texas, author of the novel Snow White, and many short story collections, including Come Back, Dr. Caligari. Donald Barthelme, who said the aim of literature is the creation of a strange object covered with fur, which breaks your heart. Here's a poem by William Wordsworth on his birthday. I have thoughts that are fed by the sun. The things which I see are welcome to me, welcome every one. I do not wish to lie dead, dead, dead without any company. Here alone on my bed with thoughts that are fed by the sun and hopes that are welcome, every one happy am I. O life, there is about thee a deep, delicious peace. I would not be without thee. Stay, O stay, yet be thou ever as now, sweetness and breath with the quiet of death. Be but thou ever as now, peace, peace, peace. William Wordsworth's poem, I Have Thoughts That Are Fed by the Sun. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices, subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org, and by LegalZoom, resources to help protect intellectual property, including trademark, copyrights, patents, and independent attorney consultations. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Mondays are back at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center, now open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m., Saturdays 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., and Sundays noon until 6 p.m. Schedules are available online at juno.org/parkrec/diamondpark. For more information, call Diamond Park Aquatic Center at 586-2782.
Okay, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. We've got a party in the studio. We've got the Carper family, the guest artists for the Folk Fest that's going on all week. Starts at 7 o'clock, Centennial Hall, and it's free, free, free. Friday, Saturday, dances, workshops, check it all out online. But right now, check it all out here with your ears. We've got Melissa Carper from Nebraska. Hey, Melissa, welcome Hello. To the show. We've got Beth Christman, who is from Kentucky but grew up in Fairbanks, correct? Then we've got Jen Maiori. Jen Maiori on guitar, and she is from Texas. And then we've got Sophia Johnson from Birmingham, England, just to do the international touch. But they have a sound. So here we are. This is something that I listened to earlier on their site, the Carper Family. And it's, I forgot the title, but it's about cheating on your car. Go ahead, ladies. You're from the Austin area. Is that where all of you live? Is that true?
Melissa's living up in Arkansas.
Yeah, I moved
these days.
Back to Arkansas. I was in Austin.
What part of Arkansas are you living in?
Eureka Springs, which is in northwest Arkansas.
I know that area.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, welcome to Juneau. You sound fantastic. So how long have you guys been playing?
About 6 years.
6 years?
Yeah.
Okay. Is this your first time, all of you, to Juneau?
It is.
I've been to Juneau before.
The Fairbanks Gal?
I've been to Folk Fest about 4 or 5 times.
Okay, so now you brought your friends.
Yep.
New friends, more friends. All right, do you have something else you want to play?
Yeah, we're going to do a George Jones song for you.
Oh, that's okay.
We wish we had a Merle Haggard song worked up, but George will have to do for today.
All right, and 8 o'clock tonight, right? 8 o'clock, Folk Fest.
Centennial Hall, Folk Fest.
All right, here we go. Let's see. 1, 2, 3.
Well, you said was my baby. Now I know sure my baby, but it seems me and you that wrote nice. If you want to be my baby, then you got to be my baby. You can teach things in suit your mind. So I was a tired leader when you told that you needed all the love I'm leaving side down. So if you want to be my baby, then you got to be my baby.
Oh,
should probably go to Centennial and get a good seat now because these, these ladies are burning up the studio. They're going to do so much at the Centennial Hall tonight, and also they're playing tomorrow the dance at 9:20, and that's at the Jack Bob?
That'll be at the Jack, yeah.
Okay, Bob Schroeder here. He's a board member of the Folk Fest. So, wow. that was terrific. And
thank
not
you.
Only do these ladies just burn it up as musicians, you guys are into this education stuff too. Does anybody want to talk about that? Do you do workshops and things like that?
Yeah, we're excited to be doing 4 workshops. We're going to be doing a singing workshop. Beth and Sophia are going to be co-teaching a workshop on improvising on your solo instrument, kind of back and forth. And Melissa will be teaching a bass workshop.
And then we're all going to do a harmony lesson.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, that's great. So how often do you guys are so tight. Like, what do you play all the time together? Or
we haven't played all together in about 2 months, except for the last 2 days we've been practicing a lot in our hotel room.
Yeah, but we used to play together a lot, so
yeah.
We didn't.
We played about 3 or 4 gigs a week in Austin for about 4 years.
It shows. It shows. So you probably, like, people are probably knocking on the door like, can we come in? They're dancing outside your door. That's
and
great.
Sophie's a new addition. She moved to Austin about a year ago.
From
England.
From Birmingham?
Yep, straight from Birmingham in England. And, I knew these gals. I was a super fan before, so I feel honored and privileged to get this chance. I've never been to Alaska before, and I've done a few gigs with these gals, and we always have such a good time. So, I'm super happy at the moment to be here and to be doing this. It's fantastic.
We need to get a bear and a moose for Sophie to see while she's here.
not a whale? Come on, ladies.
And a whale.
Over the trifecta.
Yeah. A whale.
So anyone who can pull those out of a hat, you know, anybody want to dress up as a bear, a moose, or a whale? The girl from England will be looking for you. All right, do we have time for one more? Do you have it? Do you want to?
We're going to do an Alaska song I wrote.
Oh, great.
When I lived in Fairbanks. Right before I moved down to Texas, I was really sad. So I wrote this one called Cold, Dark, and Lonely.
All right.
Myself growing older, cold, dark, and lonely, with no one hold me. At least you're not here to tell me sweet lies. Cold, dark, and lonely, with no one hold me. At least you're not here to watch me cry. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That is live in the studio, the Carper family. They are the Folk Fest guest artists tonight, 8 o'clock. Thank you, ladies, so much for coming. We're out of time because...
Thanks so much for having me.
I love my private concert with Jeff and Bob here. But thank you so much for coming to Alaska, and I hope you get to see your whale and your moose and your bear. But I know you're going to see a lot of people over the weekend,
we're
and
so
we're really happy
to be here.
Thanks for being here. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
You don't know the kind of trouble you're getting into to keep on loving me like you do. Well, you put me on a pedestal, you tell me that I'm beautiful, and not a day goes by you don't let me know how much I mean to you. Well, you got your arms around my neck, you're hugging me every chance you get. You see an opening and you're sticking in a peg, and it's like this through and through. You don't know the kind of trouble you're getting.
From TK McGuire's at the Prospector, featuring makeup consultations, French appetizers, and wine on Friday, April 15th and Saturday, April 16th. Appointment information and more at 586-3737.
Okay, the last song we heard, that was a CD of the Carper family. Everything else was live in the studio, so check it out. They're playing 8 o'clock tonight, 9:20 at the Jack tomorrow night, and they're doing lots of workshops. Those ladies were smoking. So on to the next. Here we are. We are with Heather Laverne and Richard Carter, and we are here to talk about a new theater production happening this weekend?
This weekend.
This weekend. So let's go for it.
All right.
So,
yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you. It's called Five Lesbians Eating a Quiche. It takes place in 1956, and it is a play about a women's society having their annual quiche tasting. And the communist attack, they get locked inside and all of their secrets come out.
That sounds like fun.
It's super
fun. Hilarious.
So Juno Douglas Little Theater production.
Yes, it's actually our first full-length production in over a decade.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're trying to bring back that kind of theater a little bit more, doing a little bit more, spending more money, I guess. But
and is this called like a living room drama? Is that what it's called? Like, you know, kind of a...
That's what most full-lengths would be, but this particular play is a little different. The audience actually is a part of the show. It is a little audience interaction going on. And all of them are members of the Women's Society, and they do interact with them a little bit. No one's brought up on stage, but there is some talking directly to the audience, which is really fun.
Oh, interesting. So that's why it's in such an intimate setting, which is the Hangar Ballroom.
Exactly.
7 o'clock.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And a little bit more about the play, I just want to say, it was written in 2011, and it started off as a skit. And it was written by Evan Linder and Andrew Hobgood. And coming from Chicago... where it was written, Chicago is so well known for having so many big improv scenes, the Second City and I.O. So there is a lot of improv written into the script, so the cast will get to play with the audience in that way.
Okay, so this is not your typical theater fourth wall production.
Exactly.
There is no fourth wall.
Improv, a little interaction. The fans of like Mystery Dinner Theater might want to go.
Oh, exactly.
You know?
Yeah,
not that
yeah.
it's like that. So it's a performance, but it's interactive. Mm-hmm. No fourth wall.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Nobody's safe, but nobody gets dragged on stage.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, sounds wonderful. So how many people are in the play?
There are 5 women. We have...
Eating quiche.
Exactly. We have Salisa Thole, we have Ellie Sika, Kate Ross, Jackie Schultz, and Elizabeth Powers. Great cast. And we completely lucked out. We held open auditions back in late January, and we just happened to get perfect people for this play. They fit their characters perfectly. It's wonderful.
I just want to say, it's Isabella Powers.
What did I say?
It's Elizabeth.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
Cool.
Sorry,
Bella.
It just flipped out.
Sorry, Bella. I call her Bella. Maybe that's why.
All right. And it's always so much fun because it sounds, when you think about 50s, when I think about women in the 50s, I have this stereotypical idea of, you know, don't air your dirty laundry, everything's pretty, you know,
yes.
locked tight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we watched a lot of I Love Lucy to kind of remind them, you know, what it was like. It was very proper and everything was, you know, very put together and no hair out of place. All the makeup was always on perfectly. And these women have this dark secret and it's, you know, they kind of remind themselves and each other that they're human and they have these different ideals, I guess.
And we're trying to stay as true to the period as possible with the financial means that we have. And I think we've done a great job so far in discussing also just the role of women in the 1950s as opposed to women now. And we've talked about how women in the 1950s sometimes had problems with alcoholism because they weren't working and they were housewives and they were at home all day and they were cooking and so they would just be drinking. And these women really break the mold and they're so much different. They're a part of this really strong sisterhood and they're also vibrant and such powerful characters. So it's really nice to be able to see them in that atmosphere.
It sounds great. April, you know, Mad Men's over, so if you want to go and see, you know.
If you need your fix.
Exactly. Because that's one of those things that whenever you see these movies or television shows about the 50s, it's like, really? Your puffy skirt and heels and makeup to, like, kiss your guy goodbye in the morning?
Yeah.
The kids to school? You know, and the whole hands-off of parenting, too, of, like, okay, the kids go to school, I'll be here baking cookies, but, mm-hmm.
yeah.
you know, whatever they do.
And then Uncle Sam swoops them up, and they're off to war.
Like, yep. Exactly. All right, April 8th,
yes.
9th, 10th. That's this weekend, 15th, 16th, 17th, that's next weekend, 7 p.m., Hangar Ballroom, the Juno Douglas Little Theater's first full-length production in more than a decade, and it sounds like a very interesting, not standard package theater experience. So go check it out. And to buy tickets, it's at the usual places, I would assume.
Yeah, you can get them online and Hearthside and Rainy Retreat.
Okay.
You can also buy them at the door.
Yeah, okay. and we don't have a different price at the door. It's $15 straight across the board.
Okay, check it out. All right, thanks so much.
Thank
Look forward to seeing it. I'm going to try it next weekend. Awesome. We're going to take a short break and we'll come back with our last guest, Nancy DiCerni, with Arts Up. Not that we haven't covered all of it already. Okay, be back soon.
Bird note. It's before dawn this April morning on a North Dakota prairie. Sitting quietly near a rise of ground, we begin to hear eerie whoops and cackling. And then what sounds like little motors running. At first light, we see the source of this otherworldly chorus. Male sharp-tailed grouse performing their elaborate mating dances. The size of small chickens, they dance on a matted patch of ground called a lek. Together, they're stomping their feet, extending their wings, and zipping around the lek. Then, in the same instant, they stop, stock still. All this to impress the female grouse, observing from the sidelines. This wondrous, strange display is rare. Throughout the world, very few species of birds, perhaps fewer than 100, use leks when breeding. With oil and gas drilling and the conversion of grasslands to agriculture, habitat for sharp-tailed grouse is becoming scarcer and more fragmented. This morning, a Lostwood National Wildlife Refuge in North Dakota gives our birds a place to reenact their ancient ritual and begin the cycle of their lives anew. To see videos, begin at birdnote.org.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, working with medical professionals to diagnose hearing disorders and prescribe solutions. Northland Audiology and Hearing Services. Information at 789-6780.
Okay, welcome back to the show. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO live in Alaska's capital city. Nancy Ciccarni braved the elements and walked across the street from the Jack to the KTOO studios. She's very tired, but she's here to talk about more things to do this weekend.
Unbelievably enough, there's more to do if you hadn't already figured out that Folk Fest was your thing to do. Let's see. Tonight we've got family night for preschoolers at the Valley Library.
Oh, fun.
Tango dancing. We've got music at the Red Dog, the Great Alaska Bluegrass Band, and open mic with Terry Tibbett or Matt Barnes at the Alaskan. And
oh, yeah, those are going to be hot tonight.
Yeah,
the Red Dog
yeah.
And there's musicians in town.
There's on Friday night the coffee and jam starting at 9 o'clock in the morning over at the Jack and
which
dancing
is just a
all night.
Big
all
dance,
day.
Big country dance all day.
Big dance all day. So come on down, and they have food and all sorts of wonderful stuff. There's We Eat Fish, a film screening at the Elizabeth Paradovich Hall, which is the old A&B Hall for people that are confused by that name. We have Shrek. This is the last weekend to see Shrek, and I've heard great things about it.
And that's out at Thunder Mountain. That's the high school
correct,
production.
Yes. And you were just talking about the five lesbians eating quiche, so that's happening at the Hangar. And at the Alaskan Bar at 9 p.m., we have North Country Cajun Band. And at the Red Dog, we have Hannah Yoder Band and Eli West.
Uh-huh.
So there's the post-party Folk Fest.
So you have a never-ending party for the weekend.
Doesn't it just go all night? It used to. Saturday, we have at 8 in the morning, the 11th annual Heart of Hospice Run at the Twin Lakes Shelter. There's a Norwegian breakfast at 9 a.m. at the Yacht Club. So you do your run and then go get breakfast. It sounds good.
Sounds like a guilt-free morning.
Yes, absolutely. There's a second Saturday market out at the airport shopping mall. Starts at 10, goes till 3. Folk Fest starts at noon, the 5th annual Liars and Fiddlers. At 1 p.m., they'll be over at the T.K. McGuire's. You have a Shrek matinee on Saturday. There is optional schools fair if you're planning for next year. The Juno Skating Club annual show, Heroes and Villains.
I hear that's going to be quite exciting.
Yeah, I think it's going to be amazing. That's at 3 on Saturday. We have KXLL having a showcase and dance day party, live music and more over at Alaskan. We'll see. You guys are even doing things.
Everybody's doing things. It's Folk Fest.
Yes, yes. And Hannah Yoder will be also at the 360 thing downstairs on Saturday at 5. We have a 7 p.m. Shrek. We have the skating club at 7, too. And we have more dancing at the Jack. Goes till 1 a.m. And let's see. Music at the Alaskan at 9 is Foghorn String Band. At the Red Dog is Colette Costa with Pastor Lunch Meat and the Pimentos.
When is that?
Ooh, that's 9 p.m. on Saturday night at the Red Dog.
Mm-hmm.
And Sunday, Folk Fest goes on. And there is also at 2 p.m. downstairs in the 360 North, it is the first round of our architect selection for the Wilby Arts Complex.
So, oh, that's great.
And that's open to the public, and we'd love for people to come and get more information. At 3 p.m. out at the Valley Library, it is the awards for the Poetry Omnibus, the poetry that's been selected to be on the buses for the year. That will be out there at the public library. 3. Juno Students Symphony is at 3 p.m., and they are performing on Sunday at JDHS. Spring is in the air is their thing. There's, at the Alaskan Strangs at 9 p.m., at the Red Dog Easy Leaves. And what do we got? Monday, we have Makerspace Open Shop. We have the Student Symphony, Spring is in the Air at the Glacier Valley. And on Monday at 7:30 p.m., Mondays are a drag at the Rendezvous. This is going to be a regular thing.
Ah,
sounds great.
That sounds
okay.
Great.
Yeah.
Gee, I wonder what that will be like.
It's colorful, I'm sure.
And it'll be fascinating. It'll be great.
On Tuesday, that's the monthly mudrooms, and the theme is Back in the Day. It's at 7 p.m. at Northern Light Church, $7. And come on.
No, do you know I have any stories about Back in the
no,
Day?
No, none of us. I don't remember anything. Memory is all gone.
We're not going to even ask a question
about that. Let's see. We have on, I think we have a lot to do. Oh, Venus in Fur, Cyrano Theater Company from Anchorage is in town on Wednesday the 13th at 7:30 over at PT.
Oh, that sounds fascinating.
It's mature audiences only.
It's for mature audiences only.
Yes. Do we have any of those?
I think I'm mature. I'm not sure.
Thank you. We'll see you at something.
Exactly. All right. So I just want to help people navigate the art scene here. So, of course, you could go to the site of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, jahc.org. Then also Folkfest has a website. Just search for it. And the Carpet family there tonight. They're also Sunday night. They're Friday night for the dances. There's dances. There's workshops. By all means, come on downtown because all the bars, everybody will be out and about playing and socializing, so it's a great opportunity. Thank you, Alaska Folk Fest, and all your members for bringing this to Juno. Okay, it is 3 minutes to the hour. You've been listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And the weather tonight, mostly cloudy, chance of rain. Tomorrow, rain in the morning, then rain showers likely in the afternoon. In the evening, mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers, patchy fog. Saturday, mostly cloudy, and the Saturday night, decreasing clouds. We're just looking at clouds and hovering around 50 during the day and high 30s, early 40s during the day. Thank you for listening. And have a great day. And, thank you, Carper family. You made my day. That was a fantastic studio set. Okay, see you next week. Bye.